It's the end of the year, quite a year. Let's talk about TV. Through 2020's ups and downs and safer at home orders and reopenings, TV remained. Streaming, network, cable, new series, old favorites. We're going to get to some of the best that was available this year, and you are part of this conversation. Call us now at 800-642-1234. What did you watch this year that blew you away, that helped you escape, that sparked your imagination, or maybe helped you heal? What do you recommend watching? Call 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Our guest as we navigate the year that was is Jen Chaney, TV critic at Vulture. Jen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
You're a TV critic, but maybe let's just take that cap off for a second. How important a role did TV play for you this year, not as a critic, but as a person?
Gosh, it's so hard to separate the two for me. But I think it was important for me. It was important for everybody. It was really a companion, and it always is to some degree, but it really was especially a needed companion during these times when we had to stay indoors and really weren't able to go out and socialize like we normally would. And it gave us all something to connect with, you know, to the extent that we could talk to each other over Zoom or on the phone. That could become our shared culture, something that we were bonding over is what we were all stuck inside watching together.
You've got a list, and we're going to get to that and get to a lot of recommendations. But first, what were some of the big misses that you clocked this year?
Well, people are going to get mad at me for this because it was the first like phenomenon, I guess, in the pandemic. But Tiger King, to me, was a miss in the sense that I just didn't think it was that great of a docuseries. Certainly the people in it were fascinating, and it had that sort of, I have to watch this car crash quality to it, and I totally understand why people got sucked into it. But I think somehow along the way we got confused and thought that it was worthy of Emmy nominations, and it was not. So for me, that was definitely a miss.
All right. Well, the one thing that's nice about television is that we get to have our own opinions and decide. So even if it frustrates people, there might be things on their list that, rise to the top of theirs that you wouldn't choose or vice versa. Let's get into some of the television that you thought was the best to come out this year. Your ranking is 1 to 10. And at number 5, we've got Pen 15 from Hulu. We've got a clip of the two main characters from Pen 15 and their middle schoolers who are having a heart-to-heart.
Do you think I've changed?
Who?
Do you think I've changed?
You?
Yeah. Do you?
I think that we all change all the time and that's just normal.
So you do? You think I've changed, like in a bad way?
Mostly good.
Oh my God.
No, mostly good. It was just when we were at the dance, like, you were, like, grinding with just a few more people than me and...
That talking over one another, it brings you right back to middle school. I mean, maybe even now still. What is it about Pen 15 that puts it so high up on your list for the year?
So this was the show's second season, and it's actually split its second season in half because the pandemic forced them to shut down production. So the second half of that season will come in 2021. But the remarkable thing about this show to me is that the two people you just heard talking who created the show, Maya Erskine and Anna Conkle, are in their early 30s playing basically themselves as 12 or 13 year olds. And that sounds ridiculous and like something that would not work at all as a TV show. But it's remarkable how in every episode, I just immediately forget how old they are because they just capture what it feels like. And they're acting opposite kids who are actually that age. So they're the only adults in the room, really. And they just do such a remarkable job with it. And it's really funny. It's a little bit... explicit sometimes in some of the things that it explores, but it's also just really poignant and moving. And I think the fact that they are older people playing younger people adds to the poignancy.
We're talking with Jen Chaney, who's a TV critic at Vulture. We're talking about television this year, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What do you recommend we watch? Or maybe you sat through it and you've decided you want to let other people know they should steer clear of it. You can give us a call at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. Another one that made your list that we've heard a lot about related to retail sales is The Queen's Gambit. That's number 8 on your list. It's from Netflix. We have seen stories about how chess sets have you know, had rising sales because this is a show that is based around competition and chess. Tell us more about The Queen's Gambit and why it makes your top 10.
So yeah, this is a show on Netflix about a young woman who becomes basically, you know, the premier champion of the chess world. And it goes from the 50s through the 60s. And she is an anomaly, obviously, in that she's a woman in a game that, you know, mostly is dominated by male players. I think a lot of the appeal is in Anya Taylor-Joy, who plays the lead role. And she is a remarkable actress and just so compelling to watch. And I think they also find a way to make chess, which doesn't necessarily sound like the most exciting thing to watch, really interesting and, if I may say, even a little bit sexy. And as a counterpoint to what I said earlier about Tiger King, it has been so gratifying to realize how many people are watching the show. Because when I watched it to review it before it came out, I thought it was really great. But I'm like, I don't know that this is going to be a huge thing that everyone's going to watch because it's a show about chess. And yet, as you said, not only have a lot of people watched it, but people have gotten into chess because of it. And I think that's really great.
Do you have any sense of what pushed people to hit play on that? I mean, I know that when I looked at it on Netflix, it didn't, I don't know, I just wasn't super interested. But by the time that the third person told me I needed to watch it, I just sat down and watched it. Is it word of mouth? Is it really good promotion? What pushes us to watch things like that?
Well, I think what you just described is probably the experience that a lot of people had, is that they were either hearing from their friends or they were seeing conversation on social media to such an extent that they thought, well, I guess I should watch this because everybody else is watching it. And then once they actually sat down to do it, I don't know if this was the case for you, but I think people really got drawn into the story. And, you know, and it's not a long show. Like it's, you know, not a long season. So you could get through it in a relatively brief period of time. And, I think that was part of it, too.
Yeah. Looking at your top 10 list, there are, you know, some trends. We see networks like Netflix and Hulu and HBO. Why are these companies doing so well?
I mean, yeah, this has not been a great year for traditional broadcast television. You know, the pandemic slowed things down for them. But I think their programming isn't often as exciting or interesting or intriguing as what we're finding on, you know, the cable networks like HBO or the streaming networks, which seem to be proliferating at a rate that is hard to keep up with. So I feel like that's where everybody is gravitating toward. And that's where a lot of the interesting creative decision-making and the really big chances are being taken is on those kinds of platforms.
You just spoke briefly about, you know, how things are working in the pandemic. What do we know about how television studios were able to make it work in 2020 to still be able to produce television this year?
Yeah, I mean, they had to shut down for a period of time. And toward the end of the summer, more shows started to go back into production, either to finish what they had started or to start on new seasons. So there was this idea at one point that at some point the pipeline was going to just dry up and somehow we would run out of television. That never really happened. I don't know about you, but I never felt at any point like I was running out of things to watch. But I still think there's a little bit of gray area in that, you know, even among the shows that have gone back into production, some of them have had COVID issues, like The Morning Show, the Apple TV Plus show. They had to shut down because they had some COVID cases and had to sort of cease production for a bit. And I know that happened to some other shows. So there's still some question marks about what is going to be back in 2021 and what is not.
We're talking with Jen Chaney from Vulture. She's a TV critic, and we're talking about television in 2020 and also what is ahead in 2021. We want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's the best or maybe the worst thing that you've watched all year? Give us a call now and weigh in. Ask your question at 800-642-1234. Jen, I want to make sure that we talk about your number one choice for television. We've got a clip here of I May Destroy You, the main character Arabella getting into a car at the end of a visit with her supposed boyfriend.
So, are you going to miss me?
I don't like this sort of conversation.
doesn't have to be a conversation. Are you going to miss me? Are we boyfriend and girlfriend? Could you say yes? It wouldn't be a conversation.
Okay.
So we'll talk.
Okay.
When?
No. When? When I'm ready to call you, I call. Bye.
Ooh, there's some tension there. Why does I May Destroy You top your list, Jen?
So the main premise of this show was created by Michaela Cole, who also stars in it as Arabella. And she's a writer. She goes out to a bar one night and she is drugged without her knowledge and she's raped. But she cannot remember exactly what happened. She just remembers that that occurred. She doesn't remember who did it. And so she's trying to piece together the information and figure that out while also just coming to terms with what actually happened to her. And it's actually based on, you know, things that happened in Michaela Cole's life. So I think there's a really personal element to it that you can feel in every episode. But I also think on a broader level, the show's really looking at, you know, how do you cope with trauma and how do people kind of move on when they've been in such a difficult situation, and the ways that we kind of mold our truth to suit whatever whatever perspective we bring to it. So I think it was just unlike anything else that I watched this year. And I think that's kind of the high bar that you look for when you're trying to decide what the best thing is. Was there anything else like this? And there just wasn't. I May Destroy You was completely on an island in terms of what it was doing.
It seems so heavy, and that can sometimes be hard to experience over and over again. Are there moments in I May Destroy You that lighten that load a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, there's also a really lovely story about friendship in the center of this, particularly between Arabella and her friend Terry, who have known each other since they were, you know, young kids growing up. And there are some lighter moments and some even comedic moments in it. So it's not unbearably heavy, mm-hmm. But it still obviously deals with some heavy subject matter.
Sure. We are talking with Jen Chaney, and we're talking about TV. She's a critic at Vulture. We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. We've got Joan in Wood County on the line. Hey, Joan.
Yeah, thanks. I'm listening to something or watching something that I never saw before when it originally aired, and it's on Start TV, and it originally aired on Lifetime back in 98 through 2002. And the show is called Any Day Now, and it's about Amy Potts and Louise Toussaint, can't remember her name. Anyway, it's about a friendship of these two kids, a black woman or a black girl and a white girl, that they're 30 years later now, reconnected, and they have flashbacks. They go back to when they were growing up as kids, starting off at 10 years old. And it deals with so much stuff that was pertinent then, and it's still pertinent now, dealing with death of a child, racism, stalking, poor, you know, families struggling with no money, et cetera, et cetera. Family relationships, you know, suicide of a grandparent.
Wow. Yeah, Joan, there's a lot there. Thank you so much. And I want to get Jen's take on this, because Joan says any day now was on, but I didn't watch it. And now I'm catching up all these years later. That is one opportunity we have with streaming services.
That's absolutely right. And in fact, I mean, there are a lot of shows that have aired on network TV even more recently than that, that then show up on Netflix, and it's like everyone suddenly is like, oh, I'm watching this new show. I'm like, yeah, that came out a year ago. it's as if it doesn't matter until it's on Netflix or until it shows up in one of your streaming services to some extent. But I also think that's great, because it gives some of these shows that maybe were overlooked a few years ago or even many years ago new legs and new life. And I think that's wonderful.
Yeah. Thanks again, Joan, for the call. We really appreciate it. 800-642-1234. We've got Robert from Wauwatosa ready to join our conversation. Hi, Robert.
Hello. My favorite series really surprised me, because I avoided it. It's Madam Secretary, and I didn't think it would be that great, and I was sick of politics, and started watching it anyway with my wife. and we both really liked it. It has intelligent writing, and it feels realistic. Both, she lives in her own home, so she's at home, and when she's not working, and her husband is very supportive, but at the same time sticks up for himself, and the kids that are in it are they try to keep them in the dark for some of the stuff that's going on around the world, but they're not able to very, very well, and that produces some conflict with one of the kids who is older leaving.
Huh. Robert, I'm going to jump in here because Madam Secretary is one that Robert picked up and said, you know, I don't know if I'd like this thing that's based on someone who's the Secretary of State, and really found that Robert enjoyed it. Jen, do you want to say anything about Madam Secretary or just that idea in general?
Yeah, I mean, this reminds me of what we were talking about earlier with regard to the Queen's Gambit. Mm. You know, I think during the pandemic, when maybe people had a little more time on their hands, they were maybe more likely to try something that they wouldn't ordinarily try. I think that applies to a lot of things in our life, not just TV. I've never known more people to make sourdough bread in my life than I saw over the past few months. But I think that's a good thing. It you know, it's helping us stay open-minded. I don't watch Madam Secretary, although I've heard some similar things from other people about the way that it handles some of the issues that Robert was talking about. But I do think in some ways we became a little more open to new experiences during this whole process.
We got an email from James in Wisconsin that says, "The Mandalorian!" Exclamation point. As a Star Wars nerd, this show has sent waves of goosebumps coursing over me, made me laugh, cheer, yell, and just totally geek out. And then James also mentions that if you pay close attention, you'll see little Easter eggs tying the different movies and animated series together. Yeah, The Mandalorian is something I hear a lot of people talking about. How about you, Jen?
I love The Mandalorian. I think it's a great show. I think it's one of the best Star Wars stories that we've had since the original trilogy. I mean, who doesn't like Baby Yoda? I mean, everyone loves Baby Yoda. So I loved the finale that they just, the season two finale that just showed up on Disney Plus. I am concerned about the amount of Star Wars and also Marvel material that we're about to get in the next year, because they're rolling out just series after series after series. And I worry that it's going to dilute sort of the joy that you get when they don't have so much being thrown at you. But I think The Mandalorian is very well done. I completely agree.
Let's bring Mary from Pewaukee into the conversation. Mary, what's on your television?
Okay, great. Well, I've been watching some Netflix. We just got it this year because of COVID. 7 Seconds, I just finished watching that. And it's several episodes, but I think it was just the one season. And if you want to see a black young person and a white cop, it was, I mean, just tearjerker and on the edge of your seat. Very well done. Very good acting. Then I loved The Ozark, Dead to Me, which has Christina Applegate and another actress that is just fantastic. I watched You, Y-O-U. That is amazing. Can't wait for that to come back. I sure hope it does. And then The Stranger, another, I think, newer one. So I enjoyed them all so much.
Hey, Mary, thank you so much for adding to our list here as our time is running short with Jen Chaney. And Jen, I need to ask you, after a year like 2020 and headed into 2021, what are your expectations or predictions for the new year in TV?
My prediction is unpredictability. How's that for a prediction? Because
beautifully hedged. Tell me more.
Yeah. I mean, I think looking ahead at the schedule, certainly in January, there are a lot of things we know that are locked in. But as we were trying to, we have a most anticipated of 2021 list that we published. And beyond, say, February, it started to get a little bit murkier in terms of what's coming back when. And I think it's because, you know, the networks are still trying to figure that out themselves. Even some shows that were supposed to come back this year, like Barry, for example, or Atlanta, because of COVID, they're still trying to figure out when they can actually finish production. And so there's question marks around that. So I'm just, I'm just trying to go with the flow. That's all I can do. I think that's all I know that's going to do.
I think we will wind up checking in on you as that flow continues. Jen, thank you, really. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
Jen Chaney is a TV critic at Vulture, and we talked with her about some of her favorite TV from the past year and also what we're looking forward to in 2021. You can find her list at a link on our website. It's at WPR.org/Central Time.